Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. For updates on when episodes go live, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hi.
Dave.
Dave.
And Tori.
Hello, Internet.
And we start every week with good thing. So, Craig, good.
So, my wife was making a lot of cookies for the holiday season. For us recording right now, it is the holiday season. So, she went crazy, baked a lot of stuff yesterday, and she made these neat sugary peanut butter cookies with a Hershey Kiss on top. I don't know the name of the cookie, but it's really good. So, that. I cannot share it with you guys on the internets, but it's really good.
I'm coming over.
I have no idea what those are called either.
I used to have them as a kid too. They used to like sell them at stores in boxes, but I don't remember the name of it. If I find it, I will post it in Good Thing, or I'll just ask my wife.
Okay. All right. Anybody else got anything cookie related to throw in here?
I like cookies.
I also like cookies. All right, Dave. Do a good thing, but not about cookies, I guess.
My good thing I found on a website that uses cookies.
Close enough.
All right. So I just found a YouTube channel this week by the name of Joel Haver, or Joel Haver. I don't know how to say it. I'm saying it like Gun Haver. Joel
Man,
Haver.
That's my kind of pronunciation. I like it.
yeah, just like really dumb, quick sketch, comedy sketches. A lot of them are animated like badly. I don't know why they look so terrible. Like it almost looks kind of like it's like head tracking or facial recognition with like an MS Paint base. Like I don't really know how to describe it, but it's pretty funny. Just kind of like little like humorous takes on things. Like there's one where it's like an episode of Scooby-Doo, but like the villain is laughing maniacally, but then they forget to go to commercial. So the villain's like, guys, go to commercial. I need time to set up my traps. And then like Scooby and Shaggy come back and there was no commercial break. So like the villain didn't get to set anything up. And they're like, oh, we ran into you earlier than usual. And he's like, yeah, I didn't have time to set up my traps. Pretty funny. Really, this is kind of really dry if you like that kind of humor like I do.
All right. So,
Joel Haver. Joel Haver. Haver. Whatever.
Joel Gunhaver of the Cheat Commandos. Okay. My good thing this week is the news we found out yesterday and talked about in the State of the Sanderson that Rhythmatist 2 is from... has moved up from absolutely no hope to might get sandwiched in between a Mistborn 3 book at some point in the future when he gets to those. Maybe, perhaps. That's my good thing this week.
Nice. I liked the Rhythmatist. It was like Harry Potter for nerds.
All right. Tori, what's your good thing this week?
I like the new movie version of Emma. I'm a big fan of Jane Austen. I like the books. I keep meaning to reread them. Maybe that's what 2021 is for. Anyway, new movie version. It just came out this year. I wanted to see it in the theater, but that was about the time COVID was happening. So anyway, it's on HBO Max now. And I watched it. I really enjoyed it. It stars Anya Taylor-Joy, who is also on that new Netflix show about chess, The Queen's Gambit. And yeah, I really enjoyed it just as a fan of period dramas and Jane Austen and things like that. Good movie.
All right. Anybody got anything for Emma, Jane Austen, HBO Max, anything like that?
I've heard of Jane Austen.
You know, I was thinking, Dave, that you and me, we should do some like a book club where we read Charles Dickens and Jane Austen together.
All right. As long as I get to read Charles Dickens.
No, we both have to read both of them.
Okay.
I know it's kind of unfair because I enjoy both of them and you haven't tried Jane Austen at all. But
well, I haven't tried her since high school. I didn't like her in high school. The one thing I do like about Jane Austen is that one episode of Futurama where they go into the library and there's like the giant brain.
I have not seen that episode.
giant brain, I'm winning again. Giant brain, I'm winning again. Now I'm leaving Earth for no reason. That one. Never mind.
Still haven't seen it.
But yeah, there was they were going into all these different books in the library, and they went into Pride and Prejudice at one point.
All right. So, Dave, you read some interludes and started part 3 this week, I believe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Interludes 5, 6, 7, 8, and then chapter 35, 36 of Brandon Sanderson's Words of Radiance. Okay. Rhythm of Rar. Interlude 5, The Rider of Storms, my favorite song by the Doors. Thude's report, anger spren. Are you sure? Too late, haha. So we have Eshonai, she's trying out the new storm form, not store form. And I forget who Thude is. I think, that's the once mate of her sister, right? Or is Thude her sister? I don't remember. So, was the anger spren the spren that she took into the storm? Or is she just sees anger spren? I don't remember. Well, she goes into the storm, she meets the storm father, and the storm father's like, are you sure you want to try out this new form? And Eshonai's thinking, and he's like, oh, too late! You're storm form now. And she's pretty intense. And there you have it, interlude 5.
So Thude is just one of her, like, generals.
I wrote down the dude's name and said something. I don't know. So
yep.
This is basically the next thing that was going to happen. Oh, is Thude the... Thude, I think, is actually the guy... Yeah, he's the guy that was trying to set up the meeting between Eshonai and Dalinar, right? But... I was looking forward to... Eshonai meeting up with Dalinar, but now I'm a little scared.
Surely nothing bad will happen with this new form, and Eshonai is worried for nothing.
Eshonai is not worried.
Well, she was worried until it started happening.
Yep, and now she knows what must be done, or something. Yeah, I don't have anything else to say about this.
Neither do I.
Alright, okay. So, interlude 6, Zahel. I actually don't have any bullet points. It was pretty short. Kaladin shows up right after Szeth's assassination attempt, knocks on the Zahel's door. He's staying with the Ardents on the Shattered Plains, and he's like, yo, Zahel, I changed my mind. Can you still train me? And Zahel's like, 3 a.m. Zahel doesn't want to train you, but maybe afternoon Zahel will come back. And that's it. That's it.
Well, I like the line of, like, there are two Ardents who live in this house. And, like, Kaladin's looking over his shoulder trying to see who else is there.
And there's only one bed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on to interlude 7. I think Wit was mocking me. How long had it been? So this is Talon. It's written from Talon's perspective, and we can hear through Talon what Elokar and soldiers and what are saying around him and about him, but Talon is in kind of a stupor still and trying to figure out, you know, what happened. His boys were supposed to wait for him or something, and just talks about how, like, they have to rebuild every time there's a desolation and all that, and yeah, kind of out of it. And Wit was there, and you know, Wit doesn't get along with everybody, but according to Elokar, that's what makes him a good Wit. And I believe this is the dude what showed up. This is the Tesla guy, right? He showed up at the end of the last book.
Like Tesla?
Well, yeah, because, you know, Wit is talking about, like, oh, people really appreciate timeliness. How, like, even the inventive people don't always get credit because of timing or PR or whatever. So, like, you know.
Gotta have good PR.
Talon is Tesla. He didn't get appreciated until much later.
Yeah. It has been quite a long time, which is good. Good for humanity.
And now he's a car.
Now he what?
Talonel Stone Thinew V8 four-wheel drive. Yeah. Anything else for Interlude 7? No? Okay. These were pretty short interludes, which is why we have a couple chapters afterward. Interlude 8, A Form of Power. So, the evil weather machine is run by Super Saiyans. Yeah. Nationalized in Super Saiyan form, and she can control the high storms or something, or would be able to if there were more Super Saiyans. Oh, there's also, like, she being in storm form turned off her radio or something, I think. Or is it just during the transformation?
No, she changed from AM to FM.
Oh, so she's just picking up different bands. Okay, so that's the interludes in a nutshell. Any questiones?
So the good things are happening for the Parshendi, huh?
That remains to be seen. All right.
Why don't we take a look at chapter 35 and see?
Part 3, Deadly. Chapter 35, The Multiplied Strain of Blah 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 for Nerds. I don't know. I couldn't be bothered to write the whole thing down. Alright. Adrenaline has not mastered the throw materia. Soulcaster removal of waste. Chanting, will the assassin return? The Radiants are not dead. Almighty preserve us. End scene. Adeline is practicing throwing his shard blade without it evaporating. Get in there. There's some kind of mention of soulcasters being used to remove waste, which is like do they turn it into food?
Yeah, no. They soulcast.
They soulcast.
Or don't they soulcast into smoke?
Yeah.
To make it go away?
Yep.
Why don't they soulcast it into food? It seems like a waste of matter.
Because you can't soulcast anything to anything.
Yeah, that's true. It has to believe that it can achieve. Chanting.
Hold on. Let's dig into this. Theoretically, you can soulcast anything to anything if you can... And we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Do we want to save this for spoiler time, Craig?
You make the call.
All right. Forget I said anything.
He knows about stick.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So he knows the mechanics.
Okay. Then we'll dig into it here. So, theoretically, you could soulcast anything into anything as long as it falls under one of the 10 essences, right? As long as you can convince it that it wants to be the new thing.
Seems legit.
That's what I understand.
So poop used to be food.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So convincing poop to be food again seems like it would be easier than convincing poop to be smoke.
I could see poop being steam.
No, I'm thinking because the food knows it's already lived its purpose. It's already done. It's not food anymore. It had a whole long journey through the small and large intestines, and it's done. So
Doesn't it miss being food, though?
Yeah, has poop nostalgia. Specifically is what the body cannot process, so it's different.
Maybe it misses being part of food.
Maybe.
I mean, Numehuku Makiaki Ayalunamore actually uses poop for food, so...
That was just one time, though.
I thought it was a very delicacy. Person.
He convinced Chuldung to be many different kinds of food.
You know what, actually, soul casting kind of reminds me of this Marky Stamps from Cell. I wonder if there's some sort of overarching connection that holds all the mechanics together.
Would you capitalize the C in that connection, Dave?
Cell?
No. Oh, okay. The word connection.
The word connection. Is that the name of a shard?
To denote its importance.
You need to read your Ars Arcanum again.
I'm not allowed to read Ars Arcanum. Oh, no, I'm not allowed to read Arcanum Unbounded.
You're allowed to read Ars Arcanum in the back of Way of Kings, because you already read that.
Yeah, I guess I'll read that again, but I don't remember the word connection being significant.
Or you can look at the Alloy of Law one. That one, I think, would be more appropriate.
But anyway, yeah, obviously there's something going on. I'd capitalize the C in Cosmere, though.
Sure.
All right.
Mike's point is that while it would be possible to eventually turn anything into anything, you had to be really, really good and really, really convincing about it. And I would hazard to guess that most soulcasters aren't that good. Like, they're good enough. They are experts at, like, I think 3 different essences. Is it up to 3, or maybe it is max 3?
Each different soulcaster, the the Fabriel, not the person. Like the
there are gem slots, right?
Yeah, they have three gem slots. Right. Some can do only one. Some can do anything depending on what's slotted.
So yeah. So maybe they're just not, you know, in general that skilled. There's only so many Yasnas out there.
One.
And in fact, Fel Knight, you can't see it, but Fel Knight pointed out, even Yasna wasn't that good at changing the jam.
Yam.
Yam.
Oh, sorry, the yam.
I had something. Oh, yeah. So, it just seems like it would be easier to convince former food to be food again than to convince rocks to become food, which is their standard practice.
But they can make food high in minerals. Or maybe they use rocks from the moon. Those are a little meatier.
They probably use rocks because there's a set method. Like, they know how to convince rocks to be food. Like, maybe they learn about in their Soulcaster school.
Hang on.
Of course, rocks are prevalent, like, everywhere.
Hold on.
Roshar.
Craig, you need to appreciate Dave's very good joke.
I missed it.
You did.
I did.
Dave, say your very good joke again.
Well, if they're going to turn rocks into food, then maybe they're moon rocks, because those are a little meatier.
Oh, nice. Okay.
That is, again, from Futurama.
I appreciate it.
Craig walked all over your very good joke, Dave.
It wasn't mine. It was David X. Cohen's or someone.
Sorry, Dave. I had to theory.
Sorry, David X. Cohen.
I can't avoid the theory. Man, wait till you start listening to our spoiler sections. I'm sure Mike and Tori can tell you how much I talk.
I haven't noticed in the last 17 years.
Yeah. All right.
Have we really known each other that long?
18.
Wow.
Actually. Might be more than that. I don't know.
Like what, 2000?
I don't want to give away my age on the internet.
Yep. It's true.
We're all 18.
All right. Yeah. So that was a long time to talk about all that crap.
I got that joke.
So, throw in some soul and chanting. Yeah, there's some chanting, which is kind of reminded me of Parshendi chanting, I think. I forget why I wrote that down. Maybe it has something to do with Spren or a connection to the cognitive realm. And then they're like, oh, will the assassin return? And that's a good question. I'm not actually sure he will. Or they're like, yeah, the assassin's going to return. But, well, like, after Szeth realize that, oh, he was a legit for sure Radiant, like, or at least has to consider this now, like, he's got a lot of searching to do and figuring stuff out. I don't know if he's automatically going to come back. I don't know if he's going to, you know, obey his oath Stoneholder anymore. Like, there's a lot of ifs about Szeth coming back, so I'm not sure.
I think we got to question exactly how honorable Szeth is. Because it's sort of his honor that will dictate whether he will listen to the Oathstone Holder or not.
But the whole Oathstone mechanism is a sham now, right? Like, he doesn't have to.
Oh, we're going to have to find out.
All right. And the next scene, Navani is totally in the Azorius Guild. She's blue and white from the Guilds of Ravnica and Magic the Gathering. She's, like, scholarly and wants to research stuff, but within the limits of the Vorn religion, you know.
Yeah.
She kind of looks down on the Storm Wardens because they're, in her eyes, kind of like divining the future in a way, even though to them it's scientific. And then we meet Rushu. She sounds pretty cute, but she's an Ardent, so can't date her. And then Yasna would be fine, according to Navani, so that's probably true. And then the research project, they're making a span pulley. It's like a span reed, but instead of the thing on the other end moving in the same direction, it moves in the opposite direction. So they, like, push down on a stone to lift another stone up. Or I couldn't actually tell if they had a separate stone or if they were, like, infusing, like, one half of a platform to the other half.
It's a separate weight.
Yeah, because, like,
if I have a counter,
I think
weight.
It could possibly work. Like, if you infused like 2/3 of a platform to the other third, then gravity would be pulling down. Oh, maybe not.
I mean, what you're trying to do is hook a pulley up to two parts of
Yeah, it's basically like a pulley. They push down on one end and the other end goes up. But I guess you couldn't attach a platform to itself with that method, because it would always be pulling down the full weight of the platform, and it could only push up to the normal force. So like you could maybe do that and have it, but then you couldn't, because you would have I guess it wouldn't work that way. So yeah, it would have to be a separate thing. Alright, and yeah, Yasna, Navani believes Yasna will pull through, and so do I. I mean, like I said, in the Cosmere, everyone's alive until proven dead. Follow the example of Raiden, Marsh twice, and here we are with Yasna.
No body, no crime.
And Adeline shows up to escort Navani somewhere, I forget, I don't know. They're going to see King Elikar. They got a new meeting, they gotta meet with all the High Princes, figure out what's what. And that's the end of chapter 35.
That was, like, longer than all the interludes.
Yep. Chapter 36. A New Woman. Bones Schmones. Palanquin. To the King. Picture Madron. It wasn't a lie. It was a different truth. Have fun high storming the castle. Oh, no, he Kala didn't. Gaz is missing. Oh, he's right there. Kaladin's job is to be offensive and asinine. And you know what they say? If you do what you love, you won't take work a day in your life. All right. Back to Shallan. She's a new woman. She burns some bodies. And Vitaa's like, what do we do with the bones? And Shallan says, don't you worry about the bones. Let me worry about blank. And then she orders a palanquin and finds out that Dalinar is at the King's Palace, so let's turn over around and go to the King's Palace. And Shallan finds a crumpled up picture of Bluth, as he would be, and Shallan draws another quick sketch of herself, as she would have been, like, growing up in a less fear-filled household. And, she gets into the castle. They get past the initial guards pretty easily just by, you know, announcing, like, I am the betrothed causal waifu of Adolin. And then they get to the outside of the meeting room, and they have a run-in with Kaladin. And Kaladin is like, the prince is engaged to a horn eater? And she's like, don't be silly. And he's like, where's my boots? And they go on this whole, all this thing. Kaladin, of course, recognizes Gaz, who is part of Shallan's escort. And they take hold of Gaz, and Kaladin's like, I don't believe you. And they have this whole, like, interchange of insulting each other, and it's pretty great. And then Shallan has the letter, you know, regarding her engagement to Adeline, and since it was written by Spanreed, Queen Navani would have an exact copy. So she's like, here, show this to the queen. It'll prove that I am who I say I am. And then they get full out into it and start having a rap battle. And then Shallan kind of chides herself, like, oh, Yasna wouldn't have liked me losing control like that. But it was just the thing she needed to both stall for time and call attention to themselves, so that when the meeting had an intermission, Kaladin has to kind of explain what's happening. And at the end of the chapter, he's like, you can come in, I guess, but not Vitaa or Gaz. And that's the end of this week's chapters.
So, just because Shallan stole his boots and lied to him, now Kaladin doesn't trust her.
Yeah, but I mean, it's his job, right, to be offensive and asinine.
Just because Shallan lied to him and stole his boots, is that really a good reason not to trust somebody?
Yeah.
They were new boots. He just got them.
Yeah, but he's a light-eyed captain, or a dark-eyed captain, I guess, which is weird. But
part of the thing that sells Shallan's story is how pompous she is. sells it to Kaladin.
Certainly sounds like a light eyes.
But also, he has much money, which he can use to exchange for goods and services, including boots.
Mm. Okay, I don't think people have fault with the whole boots thing. I think people have fault with the whole lying part.
Oh.
You know, lying to someone does not exactly make you trustworthy. Just saying.
And he may not even need to spend his own money on boots. He might be able to just requisition some.
Mike, why?
From his quartermaster.
Yeah, like, what's the deal with the boots? They're just boots.
This week on Seinfeld.
Hello, and welcome to the Kaladin's Boots Deep Dive Podcast.
Well, I mean, if we refer back to Sam Vimes' boots theory of economics,
then Kaladin's new boots are worthless because they're brand new, and he needs some with thin soles so he can tell what street he's walking on.
Exactly.
So, are you too familiar with Sam Vimes' boots theory of economics?
Who's Sam Vine?
No.
All right, Tori, education class, please.
Okay, so if you're poor and you need boots, and you go out and you buy boots, well, your paycheck is small, so you can only afford the cheap boots. But the cheap boots are cheap, so you wear them out, and then you have to go buy new boots rather quickly. But if you're rich, then you've got big paychecks, and you can go out and buy really high
quality. Well, lost Tori.
Yep, Tori died.
No, I'm back.
Okay, really high
high quality boots, and then they last forever. And so you'll still be on the same pair of high quality boots in the time that a poor person will have gone through like 10 different pairs. And
so,
that's unfair.
I can see some flaws with that.
Right.
Argument.
It's not a perfect analogy, but Sam Vimes is also not the smartest guy all the time.
And what does this have to do with Shallan being untrustworthy?
Nothing.
It's all about boots.
Let's move on.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
There's also the Matt Cawthon boot theory, but let's not get into that.
Do we have any questions for Dave?
Hey, Dave. Did you have anything else to add about any of this week's interludes or chapters? Possibly noting anything weird about any of the characters?
Nah, everyone seemed pretty normal.
Okay.
Wait, I have a question. I'm going to see. We have not addressed it. Are we doing cast lists for this book?
Yes.
When?
I don't know.
Okay, something to think about.
Are we already at like where it should have been and I just blanked on it?
No!
No.
We usually do it at the halfway point.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to wait until after the third set of interludes, which will be episode 140, or what. Or if you want to do it earlier. Well, we'll talk about it later. I was just bringing it up in case we knew.
Let's look at the episode list for this book and figure out when about halfway is, and if it's near those interludes, then I say doing it after.
Well, that's easy if you have the British copy, because it's broken up into two parts.
So by my very quick counting, midway would be episode 136 or 137, which is chapters 46 through 49 or 50 through 54. But we could push it a little bit until after the third set of interludes and do it on 140. I feel like that wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, there's no reason it has to be exactly halfway.
Yep, fair enough.
All right, we'll keep that in the back of our heads.
Okay, so yeah, 140 cast lists, which is in like 2 months. So
that's a
lot of time. All right, anybody got anything else for Dave?
Nope.
All right, then we should un-Dave ourselves.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Dave.
Dave's gone, play the thing.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
All right, you guys clearly want to talk about spoiler stuff.
Yeah, and who's that Zahil guy?
You don't want me walking Dave there and pointing out a giant neon sign, World Hopper, World Hopper here.
No, there's no World Hoppers. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, nothing important happened in that interlude.
I'm sad that I didn't get to reread this part, because I'm behind on my rereading. Because I think, Tori, you mentioned there is a color metaphor, and I remember the first time I read this, like, it sort of made enough sense, like, being green as in being a newbie. Like, it makes sense, so I didn't question it too much. Like, maybe Zahil just has a weird way of pulling out metaphors. It's not until later on where you realize he tries to put color in everything, and it doesn't work.
Or why is he allowed to be a grumpy Ardent? Aren't Ardents
really
owned?
Good.
Like, aren't they technically property?
They're technically, yes, property.
But this specific one is allowed to be super grumpy all the time.
He doesn't sound very religious, does he, either?
No.
Like other artists.
No, he does not give two yellow and purple striped figs for the Almighty.
That's a nice metaphor, Mike.
But he is really good at the sword fighting thing. Like, I think we've all had the experience of you've got that one coworker who they're so good at their job that you have to overlook their many, many flaws. You know what I'm saying?
He's really good at sword fighting, and he's really good at teaching.
And he cheats at sword fighting by throwing laundry at you.
Well, only for Kaladin.
I mean, if you interrupt my laundry time, I'm going to throw things at you.
So yes, listeners, Zahail, if you didn't know, is Vasher from Warbreaker. There he is. We found him.
And don't talk to him until he's had his coffee, a thing that does not exist on Roshar.
Oh, that's true. Man.
It might be a Shinovar.
We gotta visit Shinovar. They might have some coffee there.
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing from this week, actually, is we have a Zahail perspective. We got a town perspective, but that doesn't really say much. It's just sort of like, oh, it's been ages. But his mind is clouded because, you know, it's sort of broken.
Mm-hmm. But he's still got those top-notch fighting skills, as we see later when he catches a poison dart.
Also, Dave didn't point it out, but his emblem in the book is the 10 swords, which is pretty neat. It's like 10 honor blades.
I don't know that Dave has been really noticing the... yeah, he has.
No, it's 9 honor blades. What is up with that? There's 9, not 10.
And he also didn't mention anything about the epigraphs in
what
part 3.
What do we have this week? Oh, they're starting to talk about the Nahail Bond.
Yeah, I believe these are actually quotes from Words of Radiance.
Yeah, so they're going to start talking about the different orders.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like we have Dustbringers as the first one that they actually talk about.
Yep.
The Releasers.
No, they're Dustbringers. They don't be called that, but they're Dustbringers. So what do we have from, I guess, the chapters proper, since we don't have much from the interludes beyond, hey, it's Vasher. This guy here is Vasher. He mentioned a voice that he used to hear in his head that he misses. It's Vasher.
Man, there's so many clues, and I missed all of them until I looked up Coppermine and found out that was Vasher.
So in Adolin's chapter, when he meets up with Navani, you see her even here downplaying her scholarly abilities. Like, that is just built into her character.
Mm-hmm. That's Gavilar's fault. Screw that guy.
Indeed.
It would be like Dalinar as a general being like, I mean, I didn't actually win the battle. We had swordsmen and spearmen actually doing the fighting. I was just here telling them what to do and where to go. Completely unimportant. You don't even need one of those.
But yeah, Navani is best scholar. Eventually she'll have to accept it.
I don't even train them. I just pay them. But yeah, Navani is doing good work here, and we see like very early steps toward the fourth bridge.
Yep.
And all I think when Dalinar sees it, all he thinks is, yeah, we could put archers up there. That'd be pretty good.
It's such a Dalinar thing. How does this work for war? It's like, you know, people might just want to ride an elevator, you know, just to get around. Scholars want to get around. They don't want to climb stairs. Come on, other uses.
And then the Shallan chapter where she gets into a big noisy fight with Kaladin after getting caught lying to him and stealing his boots.
I mean, this is really the basis of their relationship, isn't it?
I don't know how she did... I don't know how, honestly, how Kaladin didn't just arrest her.
Yeah, true that. It's probably because she's a light eyes. Like,
even
regardless
then,
of what she's doing, she's still a noble, and you don't just go around and arrest nobles.
Except that she lied to him and stole his boots. He's a captain in the Colan army. He is the bodyguard of Dalinar, of High Prince Dalinar Colan and King Elokar. He absolutely has the authority to arrest her and then deal with the fallout of it later. And I
think that's
legit
valid.
Don't understand how this worked out that she didn't get arrested. Especially when she shows up with Gaz.
Because he had just enough doubt that maybe she was telling the truth and he would get in trouble if he did.
And he can figure that out later. If she's telling the truth, he can apologize. It's fine. Just, yeah. I don't understand how this chapter played out this way. I'm pretty sure if it had been a Kaladin viewpoint chapter instead of a Shallan viewpoint chapter, it would have gone the way I said.
Right.
So, all right. Are we good on Words of Radiance talk? Can we move on to Rhythm of War talk?
Yes, please. We have a lot to talk about this week.
Yeah, this is part five and whole book overview-ish.
It just means we can do all the spoilers now. All of them.
Yep. So we're moving into double spoiler time. Extra spoilers.
So I did remember one thing I wanted to mention from last week. Was that how I was a little creeped out when Formless took over Shallan for that brief period of time. And I had a suspicion from the very beginning that it was Shallan who was actually subconsciously using the cube or whatever, or doing like poisoning what's her face, Elay, and it turns out it was Vale. So I had a feeling something like that was happening, but ultimately maybe it's a good thing that Vale's now a part of Shallan. Like she's been absorbed. Radiant still exists, so there's still that separation, but it looks like Shallan is more whole than she has been for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I was scared when Formless finally popped up and like was taking full control over her and just going all crazy. Right, Radiant killed. That's right, Radiant did the killing because she saw Vale was going to and she knew what would do. That's a good point. Yeah.
So Tori, could you please walk us through what happens in part five?
Okay, my summary of part five is a little longish because I started to edit it down and then I got lazy. And I stopped. So, Rhythm of War, Part 5, Summary. Over in Emul, the Coalition has succeeded against Odium's army, breaking them against Ishar's forces. But reports deliver the bad news that Urithiru is all but lost. Dalinar thinks if he can get the Bondsmith Herald Ishar to train him, he might have a better chance of getting into the tower and winning it back. As he seeks such a meeting, Yasna and Wit work together on a contract finalizing the terms of the fight between Dalinar and Odium. Comments?
No.
Okay. In the tower, and this part goes back and forth between viewpoints quite a bit. In the tower, Vinley and her closest singer allies head to the Oathgate to pursue the lost listeners. But there, they learn that Vire, aka Moash, who was working the Oathgate, is off to kill someone. Worried for Kaladin's parents, Vinley goes to rescue them. Moash, though, has decided to go kill Navani. Raboniel stops him, telling him to go kill Kaladin first. Praying to whatever gods might be listening, Navani finds the anti-voidlight dagger Raboniel used to kill her daughter, forgotten in the rubble of her office. Hearing that the siblings' final defensive node is compromised, Kaladin and Teft split up, because that's always a good idea. As Cal distracts the pursuer, Teft and Lift sneak into the surgery, only to find Moash hiding there. Using Raboniel's anti-stormlight dagger, Moash kills Teft's spren, followed by Teft himself.
No!
I was so sad. Sad. Moash confronts Cal with Teft's body, just as Cal drives the pursuer away. Cal, too grief-stricken to fight, does nothing as Lirin is taken by the enemy. When the pursuer attacks Kaladin from behind, reflexes kick in, long enough for Cal to awaken like a vengeful god, violently beheading the pursuer with stormlight, before chasing after his father's captors, who throw Lirin off the tower.
Like, this whole part is sort of like Kaladin is done. He's just done. Like, this whole pursuer thing, they set up the fights earlier in the book where it's like, this is tough. Like, Kaladin was barely able to hold his own when he had his abilities, and not having any, like, it just became much more difficult, as we saw from the earlier scenes, but you flip a switch in his head, and no, we're done, like, there's no more games, Pursuer is, he's trash, done, Adhesion, no problem.
Yeah.
Head but I think before. Mike called it last book, his prediction was that Teft would be the one who says the fourth ideal.
Yeah.
And I wasn't quite expecting, maybe I was expecting him to die, but I had a feeling that that was Teft's character arc, and it is sad.
My full theory was that Kaladin would stop advancing at the third oath, and that we would shift focus to the other members of Bridge 4, likely Teft, as they, you know, progress as Windrunners.
Yep.
Which, turns out no. Turns out we're still sticking with Kaladin. Sad boy action therapist Kaladin Stormblessed.
Sad boy, best boy.
I agree.
And yeah, he in this section is just, he's done. He's done playing with the pursuer. Now, he gave him a new name of, what was it, the defeated one?
Yeah.
Yep.
Dude, that is absolutely how you mess with someone who can keep coming back to life. Give him a new title. Let everyone see who this is. Oh yeah, this is mentally and physically destroying the pursuer. And the pursuer's a jerk, so I don't care. Good stuff.
All right, what else happens, Tori?
Well, I mean, it's also kind of mentally destroying Kaladin, because they throw his father off the tower, and I was like, oh, he jumps off the tower after his father. No, he jumps because he's committing suicide. Go back and read that part again. Dalinar searches for Ishar on a high school.
Wait, really? Because he still has the glove thing, right? Like, he can make himself fall faster.
So what it says is that he was standing on the ledge just like he was when he was standing at the Honor Chasm in the rain, except this time he jumps. That's what it says.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. When I was working on my summary, I looked at that again and I was like, hang on, huh? Because Dalinar searches for Ishar on a high storm, but sees Kaladin jump from the tower, lost to despair. Like Dalinar knows, he uses the Stormfather to send Cal a vision so as to give him more time. Encouraged by a vision of Tien, Kaladin comes back to his senses, realizing he can still save his father. He swears the fourth ideal, gains his shard plate, and saves his father in the nick of time.
Okay, so you gloss over it, but that was a touching scene with Tien.
I know!
I liked it. I mean, it's sad, but it was also a nice, like, sort of farewell.
And what were Kaladin's words?
That he accepts there will be those he can't protect.
Yep, he has done it.
And Mike called it.
Well, I mean, we got pretty strong hints at it back in Oathbringer, so
yeah,
I don't know that was really a called it worthy call.
So, Vinley witnesses the Tower citizens fighting the Pursuer's soldiers, attempting to save the helpless Radiants in the infirmary. Desperate to stop the slaughter, she reveals her own status as a Radiant. Leshwe's forces stand in awe, overjoyed that Spren are willing to bond with Singers again. They fight with the humans against the Pursuer's forces long enough for Kaladin to return and finish them off.
Now, I was not expecting that reaction from the Heavenly Ones. Like, I knew that they seemed to have more honor than the other Fused, but I wasn't expecting them to be, like, overjoyed that they could bond, like, that Spren would bond with Singers. So, I mean, it was a pleasant surprise. To say
yeah,
the least.
They were happy that the Spren had forgiven them, was Leshwe's words.
Yeah.
Elsewhere in the tower, Raboniel lets Navani go so that she might escape before Moash comes back. But Navani won't leave the sibling undefended. She lures Raboniel into a trap, fatally wounding her with the dagger. Raboniel, gracious in defeat, tells Navani to run, but Moash returns. As Navani struggles, Raboniel finds just enough strength to attack Moash. With Moash distracted, Navani convinces the sibling to bond her. The light of their bond blinds Moash, sending him fleeing from the tower.
Do I get a called it? Do I get
Yay.
One of those?
Yeah.
I was a little worried. I was going to predict earlier on, like in about part two or part three, like I was starting to have doubts that Navani wouldn't bond with the sibling. Oh, man, but that was so good. Yeah.
Yeah, because the sibling didn't want to bond her because the sibling distrusted humans so much.
Right.
And the sibling had agreed that, okay, we would try bonding Relaine, but Relaine, who was on his way there at the time, was stopped by the Fused, the guards. So he's elsewhere in the tower, like, very held up.
But you got to see when Navani and sibling finally bond, and how they're sort of geeking out, which is sort of cool. Like, you can tell that they have a connection to each other, even with the sibling being, like, distrustworthy of the person who's, you know, sort of capturing Spren. Like, I think they can work things out. But you can also see the geekiness that comes out when they're like, oh, you could do the, like, the engineering and everything that comes to the tower.
It's a really
and
it's like,
yeah, isn't that cool that I did because that? It's like, yeah.
Navani is suddenly able to see how the tower works, and she can see all the fabrials that make it up, and she's like, oh, you should try doing this thing, and that might work. And the sibling's like, Yeah. Yeah, it might. And it was just, it's so cute.
And what else happens in part five?
Well, I'm still geeking out about Navani because the sibling was like, no, you're not worthy. I'm not going to do it. And Navani's like, listen here, Buster. I am too. And we're doing this. And so she stands up for herself, and I'm just so happy for her.
Well, she starts singing the anti-Voidlight song, too. That helps a little bit. It helps.
Okay, moving on. Dalinar finds Ishar at last, but the Herald is crazy and attacks him before fleeing into Shadesmar. In Ishar's camp, Dalinar and his Windrunner guards find a horrid sight. Sprin, in their physical forms, forcibly pulled from Shadesmar and subjected to gruesome experiments. They're quite dead.
I got a lot to say about the scene, and I sort of want to save it till after we're done, but I was creeped out that he's pulling Sprin out of the cognitive realm into the physical realm, and they're dying. It's as if they're sort of... It's worse. Like, they don't have any organs to survive in the physical realm. Just to be taken away from the cognitive realm into a completely different, essentially, universe with what be a different biological process. It's just bad. This is torture.
So do you think pulling them over is what killed them? Or did they get pulled over and then they were killed in these experiments? Because that's kind of how I was taking
it. That's what it sounds like. They're being pulled over and then they are dying because they can't exist in the physical realm. They are being tortured, and they have notes that say, oh, what was it, Honor Sprint or something, can survive 15 seconds, which is surprisingly long. Like, it's bad. It's bad. Dude, I was creeped out, like, majorly. Like, screw Ishar, by the way. Almost as bad as Gavilar. I don't know who's worse. Gavilar and Ishar are both really bad, and this is creepy. This is creepy. I was creeped out.
I would say Gavilar is worse because Ishar is crazy. Gavilar was doing all of those things while being not crazy. It was a choice.
Okay, but we also don't know if these things happened while Ishar was having his sane time, or if it was happening while Ishar was having his crazy time, so... Like, sane Ishar could be an absolute monster, and crazy Ishar is the one who's actually trying to like find a way out of all this.
We did get a brief glimpse of sane Ishar, who's sort of telling Dalinar a good path to follow. So maybe sane Ishar would be fine, and it's mostly insane Ishar that's doing the experiments and all this other crap, but. Regardless, guys, I feel bad for these Sprint that they're killed. They are dead. They're not dead eyes. They are just dead. And we don't even know what happens to Sprint when they die. Like, we have an idea of what happens to humans when they die, because we get glimpses of that in other stories. And same thing with singers, because we get a glimpse of that for Eshonai. But who knows what happens to Sprint when they die.
I'm still not willing to take anything from Ishar in good faith.
Abso-freaking-lutely. Even his sane part might not be good.
Also props to Brandon, because this is some, like, horror novel level descriptions of the creep. It's creepy. It's creepy.
Yep. I'm like, suddenly I'm reading something out of a horror novel. What? What is this?
So what else happens in part five?
So after the creepy dead sprint, Dalinar receives a visit from Odium, where he presents Yasna's contract of terms. Later, Taravangian receives a visit from both Zeth and Odium at the same time. As Zeth stabs Taravangian's body with Nightblood, Taravangian's mind is pulled into the Place Between Realms. Finding that a reflection of Nightblood has crossed realms with him, Taravangian uses the sword to kill Race.
What? After
his own body dies, he takes up the shard, becoming Odium.
But it's the end of book four. How did this happen?
I don't know. He meets Cultivation, learning that she orchestrated the whole thing, hoping he would be a better Odium than Race was.
Yeah, about that. We got stuff to talk about, guys, after the summary.
Yeah, let's get through the summary, and then we'll start digging into things.
Okay.
What else happens in part five?
Vinley finds the lost listeners, bringing them Sprin, willing to form Radiant Bonds.
Yay!
He finds that they've somehow tamed Chasm Fiends.
as you do. Just
right?
Nonchalantly. Yeah, we got control of these guys now.
Yeah, it's just like half a paragraph, and I'm like, I need more.
Really... No kidding.
Moving on. As Team Radiant mourns their losses, Dalinar tells Cal they have only 10 days to prepare for the fight against Odium. But neither they nor Wit realize Odium has been replaced by the smartest man on Roshar.
Well, we have to discuss that part of the story as well.
What Wit, else happens in part 5?
Yeah, Hoyt's conversation with the new Odium.
That was it. I didn't summarize that.
Okay, but what else happens in part 5?
Are you done the summary?
That's it from a summary.
Oh, boy. Okay.
No, there was a lot of stuff that happened in... There was a lot of stuff that happened in part 5. I'm sure that there was more stuff that happened in part 5.
Yeah,
there was
but
a lot more stuff.
Okay. The point is we can now talk about everything, because this is it. We can talk about the whole book, and as we remember things, we can just mention it, I guess.
All right, I have something I'd like to start with, if I may.
Yeah?
You may.
All right, so Thidakar.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy.
The head of the Ghostbloods. Consensus at this point is that it's Kaladin, and for
you
those...
No, Kelsier.
Kelsier, sorry, not Kaladin. K names.
Yep.
Kelsier. So let me sort of walk us through the steps to get there. We learn early on in this book that Thidakar is a cognitive shadow, so that limits our pool to people we don't know, returned from Nalthus, shadows from Threnody, but probably not, because they don't seem to really have much in the way of minds anymore, and Kaladin. Not Heralds. Kaladin, Kelsier.
Heralds are also cognitive shadows.
Heralds also, but we learned that Thidakar is a cognitive shadow from Kalak.
Yeah.
Because Thidakar is trying to get to Kalak to learn stuff from him, and the other Heralds should have access to him and most of what he knows already, so that's sort of off the table. So we also learn that Hoyd beat him up once, which the only cognitive shadow we know that Hoyd has beaten up is Kelsier.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. True. And... Now, if I recall, was that because they were both in the cognitive realm at the time, or is it because Kelsier's a cognitive shadow and therefore Hoyd can beat him up?
Don't know. Okay. Hoyd seemed very surprised that he could hurt him
right.
at the time. So that's
it might be
from,
because they were both in the cognitive realm.
Could be. That's from Mistborn Secret History, if anyone missed that and wants to go back and read a scene where Hoyd beats up Kelsier. It's a lot of fun. And then finally, he is referred to as the Lord of Scars, which, yeah, pretty well narrows it down to probably Kelsier, potentially someone we haven't met yet, but that one's very unlikely.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize we had all of these clues. I missed the Lord of Scars. Like, I'll be honest, it wasn't until our Discord conversation, because there's a lot. Let's be honest. There was a lot in Part 5, and I read it at midnight because I really wanted to finish it. So I missed a couple of things, and I missed that Thidakar... those clues. So thank you, Mike, for summing all those clues up. I'm well convinced that's Kelsier.
Yeah, same. I mean, I'm still open to it being a character we haven't met yet. Like, I don't know, Yesteel maybe. But
yeah.
But most
but
likely
chances are very
most
very
likely
low.
Kelsier.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Who wants to jump in with something next? Craig, I know you have a lot of stuff, so Tori, do you have a thing you want to jump in here with before we let Craig loose?
So that last chapter, the confrontation between Wit and Odium, when Wit doesn't realize that Odium has changed and Taravangian totally gets the advantage of him, and it's scary because you've seen Wit basically winning everything up until now.
Okay, yep. I am a little confused by this. So, alright, we know that Hoyd is very, very anti-Raze. Not necessarily yes. anti-Odium, anti-Raze.
Yes.
Taravangian, or Vargodium, as he shall be known now, had the chance to be like, yeah, Raze is dead, I'm the new Odium, you can go about your business now, although you're probably still trapped on this system because you have become a Knight Radiant, but, you know, have fun storming the castle, quit bothering me, kid. had that chance and decided, nope, I'm going to use shard magic to take his memories of this conversation, do it over again, and convince him that I am still Rays.
Yep, that is what he does.
And I don't know why, because it seems like not doing that would be the better outcome for him.
Well, Vargodium is new to his power, similar to how Harmony had to sort of learn certain things as well. However, Vargodium did have a conversation with Cultivation, so maybe he learned quite a bit of things. And we know he starts getting thoughts about humanity in general throughout the Cosmere. So I suspect that he has a reason. Maybe it's Cultivation and her influence that doesn't quite like Hoid, but he has some reason to not trust Hoid to let him know the truth. There is a reason, we just don't know what it is yet.
Okay.
But given the diagram and how planned everything is, Vargodium has a plan, and that plan is don't let Hoid know what's happening.
I'm very confused, because it does seem to me like the better outcome is not having Hoid dead set against you.
Yeah, but Hoid can't do anything to you.
Hoid has spent the entire Cosmere series nudging things in just this little precise way that ends up with things going the way, more or less, he wants.
Yeah, but you throw an unknown actor in there, which would be Taravangian now, instead of Rays, and it completely changes the outcome. So Hoid is expecting, you know, situation A, but in reality, it's situation B, and it completely changes everything. So it essentially lets Hoid keep planning for situation A, even though that's not what is happening. So it basically makes Hoid harmless at this point to Vargodium.
I don't think that's true at all. I don't think that can be counted on even slightly. Anyway, so Cultivation's a dragon, huh?
I missed that one as well. I should have realized when they're like, hey, there is a dragon here. I should have put it together where there's a shard holder who's a dragon.
So that brings up a question. Was Tanavast also a dragon?
Right, because they were married?
Yeah.
I mean, not necessarily.
Like, no, not necessarily he's not a dragon, or no, not necessarily they were married, because...
I think they were married, but I don't think they both had to be dragons, and apparently dragons can take a human form, so why not?
Okay. Tanavast was a small donkey who lives in a swamp with an ogre. Thank you, Fractal Doggo. My mouth is open to everything. Alright, Tori, did you have anything else before we unleash Craig on all of these poor people?
Remember the part in the preview chapters where we were talking about those metals that conduct stormlight, and I was like, hey, what if it's another god metal? And you guys were like, no, that's not a thing on Roshar. And then it turned out that, it's Raysium.
Hey, on that topic, is Raysium still a thing now that it would be...
a different holder?
Jeez, what?
Now it would be Taravangianium.
Yeah, that's a bad name.
There's a different metal,
like,
Raysium can still exist.
Right, the like, Raysium that there is would still exist. Would Taravangianium do something else? Is I guess, my question.
Right.
Same shard, but different holder. Would that change how the god metal works?
Yeah. It might be the same. I mean, the only hint we've got is Harmony and Et metal, and that's different, but that's also the combination of preservation and ruin. So,
and Sazed also like actively went in and fiddled with how metals worked on Scadrial.
So... Maybe it would work the same, and we could just call it Raysium, just because, or Vargodium. I don't know.
And then, since Spren take on metal forms sometimes in the physical realm, does that make them, like, does that mean that shard blades are made out of Tanavastium?
I think that's fair.
Since they are tiny pieces of honor.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what Honor's Metal is.
And then is Shardplate also Tanavastium, or is that... do we know Cultivation's shard holder name?
Oh, I think we do. I'm going to look it up. You guys can...
I'm getting yeses
hear me
in
typing
the chat.
I forgot the mute.
But I don't know what the name actually is. What is
Coravellium Avast.
Okay.
Wow. I don't remember reading that at all.
That thing
it's also known as She Who Brings the Dews at Dawn. Cora Vari.
Okay. But yeah, would that be shard plate metal, or am I extrapolating too far and I've gone plaid?
I don't think that would be the cultivation metal.
Okay.
But I don't fully know, so I don't know.
Or is Lyft's shard blade made out of her metal, where Kaladin's shard blade is made out of Tanavast metal, and then the other various radiants are one or the other, or a mixture of both?
See, that's what I'm wondering. Like, some Spren seem to be more cultivation-oriented, and others seem more honor-oriented.
Well, cultivation Spren and honor Spren definitely seem like pretty dead giveaways there.
Right, but the others are sort of like a weird mix. But the true mix of honor and cultivation would be the sibling. So, I don't know. Maybe, like, cultivation, like you said, cultivation Spren would become cultivation's metal.
Well, and regarding Shardplate, now we did discuss how, you know, we theorized that it was going to be formed by Windspren, and we were correct there.
For Windrunners.
For Windrunners, yes. But one thing that I didn't realize is that it's another bond. Like, he has bonded all of these Windspren. They don't just form the plate. It's another bond. Like,
they are his Windspren.
Yes.
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, the word bond was used in the book. I don't have an exact page number for you, but it did leap out at me.
Neat.
And I just read on the Coppermine wiki that Cultivation greatly dislikes Hoyt. So,
I mean, that's totally reasonable. He's a bud.
It is. Yep.
Like, she doesn't even need to really have, you know, a good reason for it, and I get it. Like, Race really dislikes Hoyt, because Hoyt has a specific grudge against him, and probably helped set up the Oath Pact. So, like, yeah, I get that. And then, you know what? I actually get Cultivations too, because if Hoyt helped set up the Oath Pact, then that locked Odium into the same system as, you know, her and Honor, which put them both in extremely large danger for thousands of years, which led to Honor's death. Yeah.
Is there a hint that we got that Hoyt helped with that, or are you just speculating?
Speculating.
Okay.
But, you know, locking him into one system is, like, a good step one for his goal of don't let Odium kill the rest of the shards.
It could have been something as simple as send Odium towards Honor and Cultivation, because he knew Honor would be able to do something like that.
Right, and we know that Hoyt doesn't have to work in direct methods, like, most of what he's done up to this point has been very indirect, so yeah.
Because it does seem weird that Odium decided to attack Honor and Cultivation next, when it made sense he dealt with Ambition. For whatever reason, that was going to be the most scary shard, so deal with Ambition first. Makes sense. But then he deals with Dominion and Devotion. Okay, maybe he's hitting couples first, because they're, like, shards who are willing to work together are scarier than shards like Preservation and Ruin, who are sort of at odds against each other.
And
yeah, I seem to recall having read a word of Brandon that he did go after Devotion and Dominion because they were working together. And
yeah.
And I would like to point out that apparently the shards, upon taking up the shards, had an agreement to not do that.
Right.
So in going after those like pairs, he was enforcing an agreement that everybody had agreed to, and thus, B, preventing any of them for realistically, you know, calling for help.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Like, they didn't have any backup on the way, whereas he did, in the form of Autonomy.
This is so against her name. I'm so angry at Autonomy.
And also, apparently just everybody involved was like, yeah, Ambition needed to go.
Yeah.
Ambition was not safe to keep around. I don't know what's up there, but apparently everybody was on board with that one. All right.
Everyone liked that.
Tori, anything else, or is it Craig time?
I feel like you're stalling for time. Like, don't let Craig talk. Don't do it.
No,
it's Craig time.
All right, go, Craig.
I got nothing. No, I'm just kidding. I had you guys for a second. So first, dude, I got chills in the Ishar scene where he is using connection. Like, I already knew how important connection was, and I've told you guys about it repeatedly, but just to watch it in action, he's like, I'm going to take your connection to Stormfather. I'm just taking that.
That's a real nice bond to the Stormfather you got there. It'd be a shame if somebody were to take it.
Holy crap! And then he's taken his connection with Odium, like, changing it. Like, oh, you have this adversarial, like, challenger type thing with Odium. I'm gonna have that too. Like, holy crap, this is powerful. This is scary powerful. When you have someone who can mess with bonds to that level, like, that is scary. And that will apply to our Knights Radiant, because all of them have these bonds with Sprint. If someone can just take that bond, that is really scary. Really powerful. Like, Ishar's power level has jumped up since I've actually seen him in action now.
And the Blackthorn wants that dude as a tutor.
When he's sane. Well, I'm pretty sure Dalinar knows better now. But originally it sounded like, hey, he was a bondsmith. He knows what he's doing. Yeah, now this is what it's like to have it used against you.
It also gives you more of an idea of what happened to the Parshendi in the past when their connection was just taken away. Like,
right. Well, so speaking, I'm glad you mentioned this, Tori, because we should talk a little bit about Ba-Ado Mishram, because I know I mentioned it last week, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But that, like, trapping that unmade has done something to the planet. So whatever that unmade was or is, whatever it enabled, it has some long-term lasting effects. Specifically, dead eyes are now a thing, which was only able to happen after that point. Because there were no dead eyes before that point. And you gotta imagine there were some failed oaths from the Knights Radiant, like, over time. Like, it just sort of happens, like, maybe you can't quite handle the oaths. Like, these things can happen, maybe.
Okay, but is that...
There were no dead eyes before.
Is that necessarily tied to trapping Ba-Ado Mishram in a gem? Or is that tied to Honor dying?
Mm.
Like, was Honor still being around the thing that allowed Spren to just sort of continue after bonds were broken?
That is a good point. That all happened roughly around the same time. We had the death of Honor and the Recreants happening roughly at the same time.
But we do also know from Shallan's conversation with Marais at the end there that Ba-Ado Mishram is the target of the Ghostbloods. Like, that's what Thydakar is really after.
Which, okay, and we know his goal is that he ultimately, as far as we know, he can't leave Scadrial. He has this power because he's super good at becoming a leader. He joins an organization, he becomes their leader. But as far as we know, he can't leave Scadrial, just like most. Although, okay, and this has been brought up in the Reddit. Vasher can leave, and we see this, Nalthus. Like, the Return can leave, and that's basically because the nature of Endowment. Like, what Endowment does, she sort of ties the identity of the Investiture to your soul. So it's a self-contained system. Most Investiture is tied to the planet or to the shard. So the Cognitive Shadows from, like, Scadrial, so Kelsier, would still be tied to the planet, unlike any other Return. Returned are weird, essentially. Returned are a special case, and that's because the Endowment is a special case. I think we know that Kelsier was trying to find a way off the planet, and maybe Bam is a key to that. And it has something to do with how this unmade can manipulate connection, if that makes sense. I don't know. I know I'm sort of glossing over a lot of things, guys. I'm trying to keep it short.
I need more evidence to back any of this up. Like, we know the Oath Pact keeps Rosharan Investiture in the Rosharan system.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's necessarily anything keeping Scadralian Investiture on Scadrial. And we for sure have seen Hoid use, you know, Allomancy off-planet.
Well, able to use the power doesn't necessarily mean you have Investiture. Well, I guess it does.
It sounded to me like you were specifically talking about Cognitive Shadows.
Cognitive Shadows, yes.
And that is something that I don't think we know enough about yet.
Cognitive shadows are strong forces of investor, strong pools of investor that are tied to some sort of mind.
Well, we know that the returned are splinters of endowment.
Okay.
Which is the strongest, like, that's the biggest chunk of a shard that isn't the shard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That we know of?
Yeah, right.
So the fact that Vasher can go to Nalthus, or can go from Nalthus to Roshar, either means that that specific investiture is special, or that nothing is actually tied to where it started. It's all about, like, in this case, it's just the Oath Pact that's making things wonky on Roshar. And the fact that Roshar is the biggest source of our information means that everything is sort of stuck through that lens.
Felnet brings a good point. In Secret History, the Eyrie were keeping an eye out for shadows from Threnody, so...
Right, because that's...
But that's in the cognitive realm. Clearly things can move around in the cognitive realm. I think it's more traveling from the cognitive to the physical that might make it difficult, but yet Vasher can do so.
And Threnody is the biggest source of cognitive shadows in the Cosmere that we know of. Like, everybody becomes a cognitive shadow there because they broke something.
Hmm.
Killing Ambition there broke something.
Right. He has a body, but is it tied to Scadrial? I don't know. I feel like... that's why I don't want to spend too much time on it, because this is all, like, speculation, and I don't know enough about what's happening to really say one way or the other. All I wanted to say is that the capture of Bam has done something to the planet, and we have gotten that information from the sibling, that when that happened, something changed with how Tower Light is made. And that's very interesting. And the fact that the Ghost Bloods, their goal is to get this gem, to get this unmade, is important and a little bit scary. I don't trust the Ghost Bloods at all. Even if Kelsier is leading it, I'm thinking Kelsier is turning villain. Like, we got villain Kelsier now.
I would submit that Kelsier was never not a villain. He was just up against worse people.
That's a good point.
So one thing that Tori didn't mention in part 5 that I would like to bring up quickly is what about that one fancy fused?
The fancy fused?
Oh, yeah. That one guy. That turned up at the end like, wahaha, I'm actually a bigger villain than you are. And that was all we had.
Oh, the one that kills the pursuer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the defeated one.
Oh, sorry, the defeated one. L.
Yes.
L.
Who is cut off from Odium, apparently, and rips parts of his body off and replaces them with metal.
As you do.
And
so he's like Wolverine.
We didn't really get all that much about him. Just, he's scary.
There was something in one of the epigraphs about L as well, and I meant to do a rereading of the epigraphs, because there were other references to L, which didn't make sense to me at the time, but now that I saw, you know, the end of the book... and how he killed the defeated one, he's important. He's definitely being set up as a villain, but who knows what. And fused are cognitive shadows. To have a cognitive shadow that isn't tied to the thing that made you is very interesting.
I think he is still tied. He just, like, had some part of that connection turned off. Like, he's obviously still connected enough to come back through the Everstorm. Otherwise, he wouldn't be here.
Yeah. You know what? We might get more information about this when that you pointed out the Silence Divide. Divine or Divide?
Divine. The Silence Divine.
Which is set on Ashen, which is where the humans came from. Now, I don't know if there's still humans there, and that's what the book is about, or if it's about before the humans moved to Roshar. But I feel like we're going
to... It's supposed to be... There are still humans there. They largely live in flying cities. The way that the cities are able to fly is everybody catches a disease that gives them flying floaty powers, but it also makes you deaf.
Right. The type of sickness you acquire gives you certain powers.
And then the villain of the piece is, like, trying to create penicillin.
I believe humans could transfer from Roshar over to Ashen because it's still in the same system. Like, the Oath Pact bounds Odium to the Rosharian system.
Right.
So they could travel through the cognitive realm over to Ashen.
But the planet is largely in uninhabitable.
Sure.
Except for these, like, just small pockets of flying cities or whatever else, if you have the right disease to survive there.
And, you know, magic traveling there relies on connection, as far as we can tell. And then cognitive realm means you need to actually know where to go, and you also need some way to go from, to transfer from cognitive to physical realm, which is difficult.
Yep, you need a perpendicularity, or be able to make perpendicularity.
Or be, or have the surge of transportation and enough stormlight.
Which I believe is just making a perpendicularity. It's just not called the same.
A temporary one-way perpendicularity? Yeah.
That's what I believe is happening anyway. We haven't really seen it.
Okay.
So, I want to talk about Taravangian. Specifically, after he takes Odium Shard, and, you know, has a little chat with Cultivation, there are hints that there's something greater happening to the Cosmere. Again, like, we had a little glimpse of this from Harmony in Mistborn Era 2, but, and I think at the time it was just, hey, maybe it was Autonomy was sort of attacking Harmony, but maybe there's something else happening out there. Taravangian got some sort of glimpse over it, and he wants to save all of humanity.
Are we getting, like, an iRobot save humanity kind of deal here, or...
Knowing him, probably.
Just like, alright, I am going to keep just enough of a population to be able to breed without worrying about inbreeding issues, and everybody else can go, keeping these about 10,000 people safe, and then just wiping everything else out.
There's some reason he feels the need for this to happen, though. But in order for him to achieve it, it does mean he has to be successful in his... Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going off on my own tangent, but this goes back to the contest that was set up between Odium and Dalinar. I don't think Hoid's plan was very good, but that's because I think Hoid's plan was specifically tailored for the best outcome for Hoid and not for Roshar.
Right.
Like, that is, and Dalinar agreed to do it anyway, but I'm like, I'm listening to this plan, I'm like, this plan is horrible. It only keeps Odium in the Rosharian system, which is, hey, that's exactly what Hoid wants to do.
That was Hoid's only goal.
I'm like, no matter what happens with the outcome, Odium is stuck in the system. It might just be for 1,000 years, but he's just there, win or lose.
Uh-huh.
So this actually might tie into our conversation earlier about why Taravangian didn't want to reveal himself to Hoid. He needs to find a third way if he wants to leave the Rosharian system. He needs an outcome that is not win or lose and ties him to Roshar. Except that might be part of what he's trying to achieve.
Except that he does make it very clear that he is still tied to this agreement.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't an agreement between Rais and Dalinar. It was an agreement between Odium and Dalinar. Yes.
Well, yeah. He still has to work within the bounds of the agreement, but I think he has reasons for keeping this information hidden from him until he can find... He needs to look at the fine print. He needs to read the contract, look at the fine print, and find a way around it. And that's what Taravangian is up to.
Man, Vin has got to read that contract with
read the first Cosmere, just don't read contracts.
She has got to read that contract at some point. Just
but yeah. So Taravangian, being the holder of Odium now, is still bound to the challenge. But he saw something when he was having conversation with Cultivation. He saw something which has inspired him to want to save all of humanity. Now we know his shard is hatred and passion. So who knows how that will change over time, because right now Taravangian has his strong, he has his own intent, but eventually his intent will shift to match that of the Odium shard.
He is going to sort of so many young children choirs, you guys.
That's true. This goes against what I thought originally, which may be a shard holder's mind and intent could influence the shard's intent. So that therefore, like with Harmony, thinking it in a different way, you would have discord instead of harmony. Maybe instead of odium, you could have passion. And it could be a good thing, because you could be passionate about saving humanity. But it sounds like he's holding the shard of hatred, and that's just what's going to happen eventually.
I would like to argue once again that harmony has never actually been harmony. It also hasn't been discord. Harmony has, up to this point, always been preservation and ruin.
Mm, right.
And never actually achieved the combination.
Which, it's funny that you mention it, because we did get a conversation between Harmony and Hoid in this book. And this is when he's setting up what needs to be done. So keep in mind that the events of this book happen before Era 2 of Mistborn. So this is before Harmony has found Wax. So it sounds like he might be setting up Wax to be his heir, is what my reading
what?
Was.
That's crazy. Who would think that?
Yep. You got it, Mike. I will give you a half point because we don't know if it's going to happen yet. But
we don't.
I definitely am agreeing with you more now.
I'm certain that it was planned for the end of Era 3.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm pretty sure that plan was put into place before Era 2 was officially even a thing.
Yeah, that's
and,
fair.
And plans can change, so it could come at the end of Era 2, and we could get, you know, a new god metal of Waxillium Ian. Waxillium Yum Yum Yum? Yeah, that's a good name.
It could just be wax, like the goopy stuff in candles.
All right, bees are officially invested now. Hey, that'd be a cool world.
Beeswax.
Like, yeah, you eat honey to gain some amount of investiture, and like you get different powers based on what kind of flowers they pollinated.
Are you taking notes, Anderson? Are you listening to this? This is the new planet, new investiture right here, beeswax.
And the pure tones of that planet would be buzzing.
Yeah, but then it's actually the wax that's the true investiture, and you have to burn candles made from beeswax to get the different
cool
light from
it?
Burning candles from beeswax reveals different things. Got it. I made a Sanderson magic system. Woo.
So how cool is it that Kaladin's shard plate can easily just transfer between people?
I
like that scene. He was just, the shard plate was being sent between people that needed it. They wear it for a moment, do the thing, and then it moves on. Like, it's a wind sprint thing. Maybe it's specifically wind runners who can do this.
I would guess so, because really cool. Yasna's plate doesn't do any of this. We still don't know what
Yasna's plate is boring.
Yeah, we still don't know.
Also, what is it made out of?
Okay, so I still don't fully understand the point of shard plate. I've brought this up before. This gives a good, valid reason for there to be shard plate, which is windrunners can send pieces around to protect different people, like, all at once. Instead of needing, you know, 30 windrunners, you can have one windrunner with 30 pieces of shard plate.
Sure.
So that's cool. But we also haven't seen, like, any other shard plate do anything cool that couldn't effectively also be done by just a regular non-shard plate Night Radiant.
Well, we only have two people with modern shard plate, and all we've seen aside from that was in the flashbacks that Dalinar had.
Yeah, and that had way less information than it should have.
Yep.
There should have been all sorts of cool stuff happening that we just didn't understand what we were seeing, but it still should have been there.
I suspect the shard plate will give advantages based on the orders attached to it. So, like, Edge Dancers would have cool frictionless stuff happening with their shard plate. Windrunners can protect multiple people because that matches their ideals, that sort of thing. I think it's sort of a, we have to wait and see, but I suspect, like with anything in this system, the applications of living, you know, shard blades and shard plate are much more useful than what we saw just sitting around.
Oh, I have a small theory. So the Oath Pact, for sure, gonna break book 5, right? We can all agree to that.
I mean, it's technically already broken.
It's bent.
It's in shambles. It's in shambles.
It's still in place enough to keep Roshar an investiture on Roshar.
Yes.
But, like, Oath Pact, for sure, will break. Book 5 has to. Otherwise, where on earth is this series going?
We're having the Contest of Champions in Book 5. They have 10 days for this to happen, which is, by the way, a crazy timetable for Book 5.
Okay. What if a new Oath Pact gets made, and Zeth, who is already a cognitive shadow, becomes one of the new heralds?
Well, that's Dalinar's plan. That's what it seems to be. He wants to set up a new Oath Pact.
But he doesn't. I don't think he knows that Zeth is already a cognitive shadow.
True.
and I'm extremely disappointed in myself for not figuring out that he was a cognitive shadow until this book.
His soul was attached weird to the body.
We had all the pieces. We had every single piece. We had the explanations, and I just didn't put it together because I'm dumb.
That's okay. We still love you.
So all do you think we're going to have one of every order that would be a new herald if that was the case?
Well, I don't know. We might just reuse the old heralds, although probably shouldn't because they're broken.
I wouldn't want to use
them.
They are
super broken.
Past their expiration date.
Yeah. Apparently cognitive shadows are only supposed to be around for a maximum of whatever amount of time is more than 300 and less than 4,500 years.
They have an expiration date. It is not forever. Although
Vasher has
been around for a while. And Vasher doesn't seem that broken.
Well, Vasher is 300 years plus however long it's been since the events of Warbreaker. And since we don't have a good timeline, we don't know.
Vasher is very old. He's certainly more than 300 years, but I don't know if I would say 4,000. So maybe you still have a point.
And then the 4,500 years is just final desolation to modern-day Roshar. That's not taking into account however long beginning of Oath Pact and them being turned into heralds until final desolation. So there's some blurry timeline there, but at some point it is too long. And
well, it's not because they're kind of shadows. They were being tortured on Braze.
And I'm sure that didn't help, but if that were the only factor, then Kelsier Thydakar wouldn't need to get a hold of Kellak to ask him about how to stay sane.
You know.
And Vasher wouldn't be showing some concern about it during his lecture either.
It's funny that you mention this because the same thing applies to shard holders. And we're getting hints of that maybe the shard holders shouldn't be holding the shards for as long as they do. It's the same exact situation. And that seems to be, and the theme of the shard holders in general seems to keep popping up. They're just humans, or they're like humans. They make mistakes.
And
like
maybe
the
that's
themselves.
The problem. Like maybe breaking out an Alcium is what, I'm having this theory at the same time that Fractal Doggo is having it in the chat. shattering out an Alcium was the start of it all. Like the shard holders are not capable of holding that power, and so the cognitive shadows that are in their domains are not capable of surviving whatever it is and keeping their sanity. Like maybe everybody's crazy.
What if Adon Alcium also was crazy, and that's why they had to shatter him?
I like that. I think that is a theory.
Ooh, and so maybe the shard, the intent of the shards is infected by the crazy, and so just as you eventually become your shard, you also eventually become crazy.
So the shard holders are cognitive shadows themselves that are tied to a shard. I'm pretty sure that's how it works. It sounds like whenever someone else, we've seen Taravangian, we've seen Sazed take up the shards, they die and disappear in the physical realm first. They're cognitive shadows. Wow. And that's probably why the intent becomes so strong after a while, because when you're just a cognitive shadow, eventually you're just sort of replaced with the intent.
If this ends up being true, this is a way darker series than I had originally thought. Because that basically means that there is no, like, stable ending to all of this.
Maybe that's what Hoid's trying to do. Maybe Hoid... Okay, hot take. Maybe Hoid is actually a good guy. And he's trying to figure out the way to get a stable ending for the Cosmere.
All right. What else happened in part 5?
Dude, I don't know. I talked about a lot. There's other stuff I wanted to talk about, but I think we got a lot here.
Okay. So after this episode, we are done talking about Rhythm of War forever.
Incorrect.
No, it's going to come up.
We will never discuss...
I was going to say we have to incorporate this into the normal spoiler section, because we'll have to talk about that, rather than having like a separate Rhythm of War section.
Double spoiler section.
Correct.
I mean, it'll be almost 2 months since the book came out. I think we're safe to start talking about spoilers in the spoiler section.
Well, yeah, for sure. And I'm also pretty sure that everybody who is a patron and has been listening live at this point has also already finished Rhythm of War. So between that and the additional buffer time, yeah, I think we're pretty safe to just incorporate this into regular spoiler time.
Yeah.
But we're done talking about it right now.
And I think that means we're at the end of the episode.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Good night, bye. Internet.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at CosmereCast or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.